Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in uncertain times. My name is Bridget Tyer, and today, as always, I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Irvin Nugent. Irvin, you're looking very snappy there in your bright red jersey, soccer jersey. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you very much. Life is good. Yeah, it's been a fun summer so far and lots of travels coming up. So things are good. And I'm excited about today's episode. And I was reflecting, you know, when you told me about it, I was thinking, I need to think about that. So why don't you tell our readers, because I'm sure they'll be the same reaction as well. What is this? So off you go.
All right. So today's topic is how to have a good day. And I think maybe a good place to start is with a quote that I recalled the other day by Ann Dillard. She's an American author and poet. I think she's most well known for her writings about nature. And she said the following: how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. Well, maybe that seems obvious, but it's a good reminder to us that the daily choices we make, you know, powerfully shape the trajectory and the quality of our life. And if we want to have a good life, and don't we all, right? Then it really requires that we sort of take a look at how we're spending our days. Are we spending them wisely? Are we making those choices in a way that supports the kind of life we find worth living? So with that in mind, there's really two questions that I'm hoping we can create some space, Irvin, for our listeners to engage in with us, right? What constitutes a good day for you? And how can you have more of them? I love those questions. And I've been asking them of people, kind of like, hey, what's a good day for you? So, Irvin, I'm curious. When was the last time that you had what you would call a really good day, and what made it good?
Yeah. So my mind kind of bifurcates into two different things. But I think that what first came to me, I think I mentioned in the last episode that I just got back from a training session in Dubai and Abu Dhabi.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you know, one of the days there, it was really great. It was a great group of people. They were curious. We laughed a lot. There was a lot of challenge going on. And I could just see a lot of growth happening and awareness. And for me, there's just something thrilling about that, to be involved in a learning process where there is curiosity and adventure and fun. And these are all ingredients, you know? So to be leading that, to me, is really a perfect day. I mean, I'm, you know, and so much of our lives is about work, and I can't think of a more beautiful work day than that. I was tired in the evening, but it was a great tired. It was, this is really great. So that's what comes to mind to me initially when I thought about what made a good day and what made it good.
I love that. It's like I can hear the laughter, you know? And yeah. Isn't laughter, shared laughter, always such a good sign that we're up to something good?
Yeah. I'm curious, what about you? What, when you think about that, you know, when have you really had a really great day recently, and what made it so good?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to pick a different day because it wasn't a work day. It was just this past Sunday. And it was such a good day. So what made it good? Well, one thing is that it wasn't rushed. There was a quality about it. And I recall from, you know, even the morning where there was just space, space to linger, space to notice things. I think I remember drinking a cup of coffee and looking outside at the birds coming to our bird feeder. And then we had an opportunity to go visit some good friends of ours out in the country where they have a home. And we got into my husband's sports car, put the top down, drove off. You know, there was just the wind in my hair and the sunshine, and it was a really pretty day. It was hot, but it was gorgeous, and it took about an hour and 15 minutes to get there. We had a lovely conversation on the way there, but there was something about being outside for that long in this car, this convertible, that just energized me. And then when we got there, lots of meaningful conversation, like you, laughter, exchange, sharing, presence, you know, being present with, you know, one another. And then to cap it all off in the evening, my son and grandson came over.
Nice.
And it was a particularly lovely visit. Mm. And I wonder, Irvin, if, so I decided, or I suggested, I said to my grandson, he's only, you know, 2 going on 3. I said, do you want to go on a nature walk? And he's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay. So we have a pond and a forest in the back of our house, you know? I said, okay, so let's be really listening and looking for signs of nature. And he got really quiet, you know, he leaned in. And so we did that, and that was really lovely. And so when I look back on the day, I think that the thing that strikes me the most is that I was really present in the day.
Yeah.
And I felt a certain sense of aliveness.
Yeah. Love that. Presence and aliveness. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, listening to your day, I think you felt very
alive. Yes, very much so. I felt very alive. And there was a presence there. There was a presence to each other. Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So interesting connection. One a work day, one not, but similar theme. Now, you know, I want to share with you, Irvin, something I've observed, and I'm curious if you've observed this as well, which is that I think there's a strong bias in our culture in terms of defining a good day around productivity. Mm-hmm. You know, that if you ask somebody, what's a good day? I think they're going to say, I wrangled my to-do list to the ground and I got everything on it done. Check, check, check.
Yes.
Right? I admit it's very satisfying to get things done and feel productive. I think, though, that there's such a bias towards this. And the problem with that, defining a good day largely by that, is that, my clients often say they rarely get everything done on their to-do list.
Yeah.
Because there's just not enough time in the day to get it all done.
Yeah.
So then where does that leave us? And I'm just curious what your reaction is to that.
Yeah, I could not agree more that there is a total bias, and it's a superficial bias. It's productivity defined as a checklist. You know, it's interesting. What comes to mind is a conversation I had with a client a little while back who was complaining about the fact that their to-do list keeps getting disrupted. And she was talking, and I was like, well, give me an example. And she was talking about, well, you know, someone came in the other day and they were just having a bad day and they were just, and talking. And I said, well, what do you do? He said, well, of course, I listened to them, et cetera. And I said, do you think the person felt a little bit better? Yeah, they did. They felt, et cetera. And I said, talk about that. And then it was this little light going on. I said, maybe, you know, being present to another person, maybe that is something worth doing as well. But it's so hard to admit that, because that did not mean I could tick off a box. It's so crazy. I agree with you so much.
And there's so much pressure to tick off all those boxes, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm curious, you know, you said you'd be asking people, and I think we relate to this phenomena, I think, in the workplace about wanting to feel productive. What else? What other core themes do you think come out when people are asked about, you know, well, what does a good day look like?
Yeah, well, there's this excellent book I want to recommend to our listeners called How to Have a Good Day by Caroline Webb. And it came out several years ago, but man, it is chock full of incredibly practical tips for how to organize and manage ourselves. But anyways, one of the things that she shared in the book is that when you ask people what a good day means to them, and she's done that and, you know, collected a fair amount of answers and so forth, there are 4 key themes that emerge, right? Mm. And so I'm curious what you think of these themes. Now, the first one's not going to surprise you. I felt productive. That's the first theme. Here is another one. I contributed in a meaningful way. Back to your example about the client who was complaining about that conversation, right?
Yeah.
My relationships and interactions with others were positive and productive. That's another theme that comes up. That makes sense, because we're engaging and interacting with people all day. And then the last one, I felt competent and knew I had done a good job.
Yeah.
That one really hits me because my daughter was recently complaining about a really bad day. Mm. And I knew it was at its core, it was because she had been critiqued in front of her peers and did not feel competent.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What strikes you about those themes?
For me, it's the balance in those four. There's a balance of connection. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of connect. So it's we are people of relationships. And so in other words, there's something about relationships going on there. And then there's something about, you know, it's so easy, I think, to resurface some of those. Like, I felt productive. I did 19 to-dos. And because I did 19 to-dos, I was meaningful and et cetera. And I feel competent. But I think, I don't know, I get a feeling there's something deeper going on there. There's a movement, I think, of the heart that strikes me off that what I do has value. And the value is not so much because I got 19 things done, but it's that I'm contributing. There's meaning coming out from what I do. And of course, it's that balance of relationship and then meaning and value. My life has meaning and value, and that, and however we define that, all of us are going to define it, but there's something, it's deeper. It's not just.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's depth.
Yes.
And there's balance.
Yeah.
In these themes.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it always seems to be about balance, doesn't it?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I love those four things. So now I think you said at the very beginning, there's two things we're going to discuss. One is what constitutes a good day. And then the second one is, well, how do we have more of them?
Right.
So let's move to that. Anything come to mind about how we may have more good days?
Yes. And so I would suggest to our listeners that the first thing to do, and we're kind of doing it together, you and I now, is to do your own good day audit. You know, step back from the daily grind, as we say, and reflect on some questions to find your own themes.
Yeah.
So let me suggest a few questions. Start with, what does a good day mean to me, look like to me? And to answer that question, really think about, when was the last time you had a really good day? And then what happened in that day? What was it like? What did it feel like? What did it sound like? What was the texture of it? What was the color of it? And then find another good day. They don't have to be perfect days, just good days on balance, on whole. And see if you can identify the themes, your themes, because I think that's where we find the, and I don't want to call it a recipe because there is no such thing, but we find our own take on this, right? Now, when I ask people, and I have, what constitutes a good day for you? And sometimes they say, well, does it have to be at work? Because I don't have any of those. And that's revealing unto itself, right?
Yes.
To notice what you notice.
Yeah.
And then the second part of the audit is, how about a bad day? When was the last time you had a bad day? And what made it bad? Same thing, kind of look for the clues, look for the themes. And then, of course, you know, once you've got a sense of, okay, you know, these really are my themes that make good days good and bad days not so good. The question we then have to kind of turn our attention to is, what would it take for me to have more good days? Because you see, I am the author of my days. I'm the author of my life. And if life is the book, the days are the pages in that book, and I'm authoring those too. Although I think, and Carolyn Webb says this in the book that she wrote, you know, How to Have a Good Day, that we often feel like we don't have a lot of authority or authorship over our days. But if we really stick with that and challenge ourselves, the truth is we do. And so we have to then say, okay, what's one change I can make to have more good days? And start small.
Yeah.
But start. You know, start. I'm going to give a kind of a very simple example of something, a change I made that has helped me to have more good days. And it's really simple. And it's this. Like you, I do a lot of training, a lot of presenting, a lot of facilitating. And a lot of my clients are in DC or, you know, elsewhere where I have to travel a bit and I got to get through traffic and I got to find parking and all that. And I would come into the presentation a little tense because I'd been fighting traffic and looking for parking in DC. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to keep doing this. I'm going to Uber on the days that I have important keynotes, trainings,
because what I'm going to do is I'm going to sit in the back of that car and I'm going to get present and I'm going to prepare and I'm going to just relax and imagine this in a presentation. And I got to tell you, it has made all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's simple, but let me tell you, I've stacked up more good days because I walk into those presentations and trainings in a different headspace.
Yeah. So important.
All right, Irvin. So that's the good day audit. Good day, bad day audit. That's one thing we can do. But I'm curious with you in terms of your work with your clients, what's a change you've seen people make that has led to them having more good days?
Well, I would say change and a change of mindset around the calendar. Mm-hmm. That in many ways, clients felt chained to the calendar. And it's really being ruthless and taking charge of that. And also what possibilities. And I think, you know, where I'm coming from, and I'm sure many people can relate to that, is so many people seem to live in a world of back-to-back meetings. That this incessant meeting after meeting after meeting, it sounds tiring, and it is. And just from numerous neuroscience studies, it actually has a negative impact in brain activity. So it's going to increase our stress. It's going to decrease our focus. Mm-hmm. God knows our focus is challenged enough anyway. And, you know, if you look at studies with EEGs, you know, which is brain monitoring, it shows that without any break throughout the day, our beta wave activity, which is associated with stress, increases with successive meetings. And, you know, when you're stressed, you have a little bit of mental withdrawal, your engagement goes down. So even taking short breaks can reset, you know? And, you know, I go back to, you know, I remember in the midst of all the scariness of COVID, initially, one of the things that gave people a little bit of, oh, this is exciting, was I get to work from home. I don't have to go to the office and I reclaim some of my time. And then it turned into a monster because very quickly it turned into, oh my God, I'm in Zoom. And literally it is relentless. It's meeting after meeting after meeting. And then we had Zoom fatigue, which really is this. And so we lost some of the innate little breaks we used to have, you know, and it's just a reminder that our mental fitness, you know, we talk about being present and being present is one of those ingredients in a good day. Our mental fitness depends on some of these breaks. You know, so what's the solution? And I think first, I think just want to mention two things. One is just as you're able to put in the calendar meetings, mm-hmm. why not put in your calendar things like lunch breaks, things like thinking time, prep time, et cetera. And, you know, at first, when I mentioned it to clients, they resist. Oh, no, I can't do that. And they said, why? I said, where in your job description does it say you have to be available every single minute for a meeting? I said, it doesn't have that. And some people took it and they said, oh my God, even if it was just for 15 minutes, it was so framed because it was in the calendar. And because it was in the calendar, it was there. So that was another thing. And then company-wide culture, can we even think about building a little break? Now, I got to shout out one of my clients. One of my clients is Allidade. And Allidade did this. And funny, about 2 years ago, I do a set of talks for them every year. And we were doing the calendar. And I was saying, well, how about 11? They said, oh, it would be 11:05. And I said, why is it 11:05? I said, we have a company-wide culture that every meeting starts at 05 and ends at 00. And I thought, wow, I love that. It's the permission, you know, it's the permission that I am allowed 5 minutes, which I think is really important.
Oh, that is so great.
Yeah.
Because I ask my clients to insert those 5 minute breaks between meetings, but it's so much easier if the culture does it.
Yes.
You don't have to be the outlier.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious then about leaders you've worked with, Bridget, who are able to kind of take a stand, you know, I'm going to create a space which is a little more reflective. How are they able to do so? So we've got a little thing about taking charge of your calendar. Anything else come to mind?
Yeah, well, it is, you do have to take a stand because what I've had happen, and I wonder if this has been true for your clients, is they'll go, yeah, that's a great idea. I'm going to put some time on my calendar to think and plan. But then the next time I talked to them, they said, yeah, I did it, but people grabbed the time. Or something came up and I had to, you know, I had to deal with it. So you can put the time on your calendar, but you actually have to take a stand.
Yeah.
for yourself.
Yeah.
And, you know, as a leader, if you do not have any reflective space in your day or week, you are not leading. You are reacting.
Totally.
So I had a client who decided that, and this was after many years of not being able to be as effective as he wanted, that Thursday and Friday afternoons, he would not take meetings unless they were of an urgent nature. And that space became space to do what he refers to as deep work, mm-hmm. which is where he brings his focused attention and his best thinking to a key priority, and he moves it forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he is a CEO, and he does have, obviously, a lot of control over his calendar than maybe a mid-level manager who I can hear now might be saying, well, that's fine for him, but, you know, I don't have control like that. But again, I challenge each and every one of us.
Yeah.
If you don't take charge of your calendar, then it owns you.
Yes.
And that's no way to live. Irvin, when you were running that Catholic Charities organization and you had a lot of demands on your time, did you have a practice for, or did you take a stand for having reflective space in your day?
You know, one of the things I did that I found very liberating is that I did try and create some space for thinking. I did it in two ways. One was I'm a morning person. So I really do great thinking in the morning. Mm-hmm. So what I did is I came a little bit earlier to work and I shut the door, knowing that most people, you know, no demands on my time were needed before 8:30. So if I got there at 7:30, I had an hour and I left on time. I didn't stay crazy hours at night. I left on time, but that hour in the morning was just wonderful. And it was great because I go to work knowing, I've got a little bit of free time. And it was amazing what it did mentally. The second practice I did, and actually I've mentioned it to quite a few clients and they love it, is if you have the luxury of having some meeting room space in your building, try and build in an hour, but go to a meeting room. Go with something you want to do, like have one thing, and it avoids the temptation of having email and phone calls and all the other things. And if you're just focused on the one thing you want to do and you're in a new space, it's crazy how that creates something new and exciting and the ability to focus.
I love that. In fact, the CEO that I was just mentioning on Thursdays and Fridays, that's what he does. He goes to a different space to do that deep work.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Yeah. So any other ideas to share with our listeners about how to have some more good days, Bridget?
Well, the kind of sticking with this idea that we mentioned at the top of our conversation that there's this bias towards productivity, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So look, we all want to be productive and that is part of a good day. But what I want to say is that let's balance presence with productivity. So what do I mean by that? And how does that look? Well, a good example is my husband. So he recently has been having more good days. Mm. I asked him, like, why? Like, what's happened? This is what he shared with me. He said, I've decided not to let my to-do list be the main driver of my day. Mm. So he still makes his list. He's a huge list maker and he gets things done because he is a doer. But he says, you know, my attention now is on being calm. And these are his words, on being calm, purposeful, and present. You know, as I go through my day. And then he said, you know, at the end of the day, I know I've had a good day when I feel calm and at peace.
Mm, love that.
Well, this is a big shift.
Yeah.
Because this is a person who is filled with tenacity and determination to finish tasks. On the Working Genius, I don't know if you're familiar with that assessment.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay.
One of his geniuses is tenacity. All right. So he's one of the most productive and efficient people that I know. But obviously, that wasn't adding up to enough good days for him.
Yeah.
And so now he sets this intention, you know, every day about how he wants to be. And he trusts that the to-do list will take care of itself because he's got that mastered. The other thing I would like to share about this story, because it really hit me, is he said that this shift has changed his sense of self-worth because he no longer defines how much he's gotten done in a day, right? As the key or maybe only metric of his worth.
Mm.
And I thought, well, isn't that lovely? You know, that maybe he didn't get everything done, but if he's at peace and content at the end of the day, that's still a good day. So I don't know. That really kind of inspired me.
I love that. Oh my God, that's amazing. I think it's a reminder to all of us, and we have mentioned this in quite a few podcasts, that so often our bodies are wise, and we do not take time to listen to our bodies. We've lots of mental gymnastics going on, and to do lists, etc., going on, and we feel at work at times we're valued because of what's on our neck upwards. And yet, you know, we've talked today about balance and calm and purpose, etc. And our body wants to speak to that too. Mm. And so are we creating a little bit of space? I love that about your husband. Are you creating a little bit of space for your body kind of share its wisdom? And of course, the way that happens is by literally having a pause of having some mindful breathing, you know, just checking in. It's like, oof, you know, am I tense? Am I racing? Am I preoccupied that because item number 17 in my to-do list is not going to get done today, you know? So just have a little check-in is, you know, pushing the pause. And it doesn't have to be 25 minutes. It just has to be a minute or two just of some breathing, some centering, grounding ourselves. And then the other thing is, you know, paying attention to our senses. And you were talking about your grandchild and bringing your grandchild out to the back for your perfect day. And you said to him, oh, what are you noticing? And what a great practice that is. You know, just getting in touch with our senses and what are we hearing? What are we feeling? What are we tasting? All of that is important. So I think, you know, I think part of touching, you know, or kind of creating a check-in with our body, I think our body will lead us as well. And our body says, you know, I want a good day and I'm going to help you have a good day and just bring me into the conversation.
I love that. You know, it's really about more mindfully engaging
in
our day, right? Yeah. And more holistically engaging in our day. As you were talking, I was recalling now a client that when we first started working together, she wasn't having a lot of good days.
Mm.
And she's having a lot of really good days now. And do you know what? It's really, there's nothing different in the nature of her job. It's all the things that you just said. She is showing up each day with greater mindfulness, right? Greater awareness, greater intentionality, greater presence. And it's like somebody flipped a switch.
Yeah.
So it's just great. You know, at the end of the day, we have to remember something, which is our true nature.
Yeah.
We're human beings, not human doings.
Mm. Yeah.
And if we just honor and align with that in whatever way works for us, I think we will absolutely have more good days.
Yeah. Oh, I've loved this conversation. It's been so reflective. I have not read the book by Carolyn Webb, How to Have a Great Day, but it's going to be on my list because I think, you know, and the other thing that strikes me is that I have quite a few friends who are having the retirement conversation. Mm. It's such a perfect time as well. You know, what contributes to good day changes in life, you know, from our 20s to our 40s to our 60s. And these are great conversations to have at different points in our life as well. But I'm going back to her, you know, and I love this idea of feeling productive, contributing in a meaningful way, relationships and interactions are positive, and I feel competent. And I love this audit of really reflecting on good and bad as well. So this has been such a rich conversation, and hopefully our listeners have found it rich as well. And I set you loose to reflect on good days and what makes good days, and hopefully kind of come yourself with a little ingredients or a recipe for how you can create more good days in your life. So thank you, Bridget. Great conversation.
Thank you, Irvin. It was just delightful.